Welcome to another episode of Talk About That. I'm your host, John.
And I'm Johnny. Was I supposed to? You didn't tell me I was supposed to say that right after.
I'm looking at you.
I don't know. Johnny, I don't want to interrupt. We interrupt each other.
You know, they say 80% of communication is nonverbal, but I don't. Now you finish my sentence.
I don't. Are you sure about all that?
I don't really buy into that stat that I just made up.
I think one of the things I'm working on myself this year is I think that I do a lot of waiting to talk instead of listening, you know? Mm. I'm trying to be a better listener. Because I sometimes I'll be like, I'll finish someone's sentence for them.
Yeah.
They'll be like, yeah, maybe we should go. And I'll be like, get something to eat. And they'll be like, home. You know? So, yeah, like, you never want to be that person that's just like, just doing that all the time.
Yeah. It's easy to do. I notice, like, so we did a thing on Wednesday night where we're bringing up like a co-facilitator to me and Pastor Andrew into our group thing right now, but someone just who's out there. And, you know, that's when it's hard, is when, you know, people are listening and you're trying to remember content that, you know, you want to get through in the night that you also, you know, it's one of those moments where it's easy not to pay attention, because it's not just that you don't want to be engaged in the conversation, but your conversation is being overheard by other people, and there's purposes to it. You know, like, I know when we get done tonight, we want X, X, and X to happen. So, no, I agree. So,
yeah, you talk about co-facilitator too. I think that makes it hard too. Like, I used to do these events and then be like the married couple.
Yeah.
And it would be really hard for one of the people not to steamroll the other.
Yeah.
When you see it, like, you don't see a lot of comedy teams.
Right.
Because of that. Because one's going to be dominant if you're not careful. Right. There's very few. There's a pair of twins called the Sklar Brothers, and they're out of St. Louis, Missouri, is where they started. And they're pretty well known now. They had a show on ESPN called Cheap Seats where they would, like, watch old shows. But they're really funny stand-ups. But they do kind of step on each other, but it's in a funny way, and they seem to have this great rhythm together. And
yeah.
You never see one without the other, really, and it's pretty interesting. I think I read a story on Twitter the other day that one of them missed a show one time. He was late getting to the show at a club, and so they, like, Skyped him in or something.
Wow.
So they still did the show. One was on, like, a monitor, like an AV cart. They rolled it out onto the stage.
Wow. There'd be no chance that the Wi-Fi network would sustain that if we tried to pull something like that off.
No.
Yeah, because, you know, you're just you're putting so much.
I've always wanted to do that, though, like interact with myself at some point in the show, like on the screen. That could be a funny gimmick.
You mean like pre-record it?
Yeah, pre-record. No, John. What? Like in The Prestige, where I've made a duplicate of myself.
Obviously, I mean pre-record it. I just say, okay, sorry.
It's early, John. Wait a minute. You mean cloning?
You mean you're going to be... Okay.
Is it safe or even legal? You're a dummy. No, it's fine.
It's fine.
So what's going on with you this week? How's your week?
You know what? It's going well.
Yeah?
Laura had to travel. So...
Didn't she go to Touchdown Jesus, South Bend?
She was at South Bend, yeah. No, so I went with her earlier in the year, because she has a client up there. And we went into the Notre Dame, like, onto the campus and into, like, their schools. What do you call those things? School spirit stores. I don't know where I'm going here. Where you go buy things.
I always want to call it the pro shop, but it's not pro. It's the amateur shop.
They have a...
right? They should call those the amateur
shop.
They
really should, yeah.
I know what you're talking about. It's like the bookstore is basically what it is.
You know what? That's a good word. I think it was a bookstore. Just kidding.
Were kids paying $500 for a book that's worth $18? Then it's a bookstore.
I don't know, but the apparel was surprisingly affordable, because usually, like, if you go in the UT shop, you know, just, man, it's like, oh, this shirt you could get online for $20 bucks, and it's $50, you know. But anyway, I don't like Notre Dame.
What's not to like? They've been down a long time.
Who does like? Look, you either you either love Notre Dame or you hate Notre Dame. Like, but most people I know, because we're down here, they hate Notre Dame.
Well, what happened in the '90s? They signed this. 10 or 15 year deal with CBS to be
NBC.
NBC.
Yep.
And so it was like they were on TV all the time when they were bad.
Yeah.
So people kept – that's what started it. Why are they keep – you know, they're not playing your team.
Well, they weren't in a conference either.
Yeah, they're not showing your team on TV. They're showing Notre Dame. And you didn't realize, like, there's this behind the – because they had contended for championships in the late 80s. So it was just like this felt like the right move.
Isn't that true that they weren't in a conference?
They're still in a conference.
Okay, the basketball, they're in
basketball, they did join the Big East,
I think. I think there's a real, like, what the heck? You know, are you – because conference – think about how much conference plays into what happens with us. So, you know, the conference conversation
right.
with Tennessee football, how many times do you see somebody online say, yeah, but, you know, if Clemson was in the SEC, yeah. you know, then they would have lost X games because, you know, they would have had to play Auburn, Georgia, Alabama back-to-back. And no matter how good they are, all yeah. they had to do is play Duke, Florida State. You know, that, I mean, it was like their only real game was Florida State.
Right.
So you take Notre Dame, but they do play a lot of hard games. A lot of difficult teams out of other countries.
Well, and they've kind of proven that they've been in two straight national championship games. I think they've proven themselves, John. I think you need to lay off Clemson.
They haven't been. I'm talking about Notre Dame now.
Oh, Notre Dame.
Yeah. I think Clemson's amazing.
Oh.
And I will not stand for your baseless accusations. So remember that part about listening.
Marty Simpson is a former Gamecock player. So he played for South Carolina.
Yeah, he was a kicker.
He was a kicker for 4 years, the bad years. The first SEC years. He scored the first 6 SEC points for South Carolina. That's the trivia question
wow.
for Marty.
Wow.
And I think they lost the game like 22-6. But no, I don't know what he – but he did score the first 6. But so they hate Clemson. That's the big – it's a yeah. huge interstate rival. And so he does these videos during rivalry week for the last how many ever years?
During what?
Rivalry week. It's hard to say, isn't it?
Rivalry Raggy.
Easy for you to say. He does these videos, and one of them was about, I didn't know this, but Clemson evidently releases like 30,000 orange balloons every home game.
Yeah.
And it's a big, huge. Have you seen this? Mm-hmm. It's this big, huge thing. So Marty did this thing where he went around asking people in the parking lot, not saying he was a South Carolina fan, like, what do you think about the balloons? And they were like, we love it. We love the balloons. He goes, you ever think about where the balloons go? I don't know. So they just burst. You don't know where 30,000 balloons, it's, you know, whatever, how many home games a year, you know, 6 home games a year, how many years they've been doing it. He added it up. It's like, how many million balloons? He's like, he goes, what's happening to the balloons? So he does this documentary style. And so he called the video Death from Above. And he was trying to, like, say it had this huge impact on the environment. And then he told me he was filming it. And I was like, dude, this is amazing. So he went at some point. He was driving in his car when he was filming that video. And he saw this dead deer on the side of the road. And he went and he tied.
No, he did not.
He tied, like, these half-deflated orange balloons.
Onto a dead deer carcass.
Like with a ribbon, you know. He tied the rope, the string of it, around this dead deer. So you couldn't see the deer's head. It was just, like, covered in balloons. And he was just like, I bet the last thoughts of this deer were, why now? Why like this? Or was something like that.
So do you want to know a weird connection yeah. to this story?
Okay.
So my friend Mike Hamilton.
Blows up the balloons.
My friend Mike Hamilton.
Oh, former, yeah.
Former athletic director at Tennessee, who we worked on a couple, you know, writing things. And he works with Show Hope, the adoption yeah. agency and other things. He got his start. So he was a Clemson grad.
Yeah.
And so he went to Clemson, got his start. He started the balloon thing.
Oh, wow. And
Mike started a lot of those things with the, I forget the name of the organization. It's a different name. It's an acronym. But there's an organization that Mike was key in leading, and the balloon.
Just campus spirit organization kind of thing.
It was in the.
Don't tell me the balloons like help charity or something.
No. But it was like in the athletic
okay.
department, and he was like a grad assistant in that department kind of thing, I think. Yeah. And then so anyway, very yeah, interesting. So we should get them both to talk to each other.
Death from Above.
About.
But dude, I gave this because like as the credits are rolling on the video, like I gave him the idea of like find all the like. Whatever, the Al Gore photos of what's happening to the environment, you know, the what is it called? Inconvenient Truth photos yeah. of like the polar bear alone on the iceberg that's melting around him, you know, and he's just floating like nowhere to go. I was just like, put balloons around. See, he photoshopped all these balloons around the edge of the I mean, I think he put him coming out of the blowhole of a huge, like, whale. Like, the blowhole was, like, blowing out.
And the balloons are still inflated, right?
I don't know. Okay. It's like, there's some pieces in there, too. Because that's what happens. They burst.
Right.
Anyway, jeez. Clemson fans did not like it. And now they've discontinued the balloons. So they've stopped doing it.
Because of the video.
Well, Marty says I'll take all the credit. But there was zero research. And it should be obvious by watching it. But he gets so much hatred from Clemson fans who are like, you're the reason. You know, it's so funny.
Oh, my gosh.
Beautiful. That fuels Marty, though. He's that kind of guy where it's just like,
yes.
If you write an angry comment in all caps, he's like, I've won. You're this upset. He loves it.
See, I'm not made that way.
No, me neither.
No, I don't like it.
I did a show one time. It was just like I'd been on Twitter like 7 months. I did a show for the second time at a university, Christian University in Missouri. And so I was being brought back to do the freshman orientation, whatever. So it's a different group every year.
Mm-hmm.
So I could feasibly do it every year, mm-hmm. do the same material. But I did, and I did some new stuff. But either way, they were bringing me back. And this time they were inviting former students. They invited, you know, in other words, they were inviting upperclassmen. So some people who had been the year before as freshmen were invited too now. So I get this tweet. Somebody had like copied me. It's the first time I'd ever experienced that where somebody at replied and they used my handle and said, oh, great. Johnny W's coming back to Evangel. Said no one ever. This was like 2011 when that was still a thing. Said no one ever was like a big dig, you know. And it destroyed me. I was just like, what did I do? I wanted to confront the person.
Oh, no.
I would never do that now, but I was like really young into it. And I was just like, what?
And they were just trolling.
Yeah, they were just they were trying to be whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, maybe. What did I do? They laughed. It really bothered me.
Yeah. There's that. I forget who I was talking with this week about that. If you put out anything.
Yeah.
Anything you're going to do that is not just within the confines of your own home and family, and even then you are going to have somebody who doesn't like what you do. And that's so, so hard.
Yeah, even if it's just like 1%.
Yeah.
If you get a million views, that 1% suddenly is a lot of people.
Yeah.
So if you just read every hateful comment, you can be like, oh my gosh.
Dorbit.
That's the thing is like, what do you think about that? Of voting, like voting on, I know voting on like pastor is one thing, but like there's some churches who vote on everything.
Right. So we recently changed our constitutional. So we had a constitution anyway that the only thing you ever voted on was pastor anyway or a large financial deal. There was a requirement.
Right,
that
so you can keep absolute control. I understand.
Right. That's
the
idea.
That's the goal.
Well.
It's interesting that it's called a constitution, too. It makes you sound like you're the founding fathers.
It does.
I
actually, and I'll nerd out on some of this, so you'll have to draw me back. But
was there a Continental Congress of sorts?
Who is the Paul Revere of church constitutions? That's what I want to know. Anywho, I don't think Paul Revere had anything to do with the Constitution, but because people don't know that there was 10 years with no Constitution. But anywho, who cares about the Articles of Confederation? So
that's what I want to know. I did visit Philadelphia and the whole thing about them being the capital for a time and all that was really fascinating to me. I like that stuff.
Yeah. No, I love that. We're going to Boston in the fall for an anniversary trip.
And, oh, okay.
Kind of doing a little history walk.
That'll be a Paul Revere thing, right? Wasn't that near Boston?
Yeah.
The Midnight Ride. Wasn't there another dude, Dawes, that gets like no credit?
Yeah, he gets nothing.
But I remember him.
Yeah.
There was a comedy writer who wrote a story, a book of short stories, and one of them was like a 6-page thing from the perspective of Paul Revere's horse and how he didn't get any credit.
Nice.
It was his idea, even. We should ride through the. Oh, that's a great idea. And then he goes, and then he ties me to a post and he goes inside to celebrate. And I was like, well, he'll be back. It's just a really funny idea. Anyway, go ahead with your church.
I'm sure it's very fascinating. I think my issue with the marriage of American democratic ideals to biblical structure is it may be the best up to now human system, but it's still far from biblical. And it gets us in trouble. Like, so I'm not, again, I'm a history teacher, So I'm totally pro American government. Like everybody understood, I'm not anti democracy. I think though that the ideals, again, we use that example before, the two little root systems get so intertwined that people no longer know in church world where the biblical system and the earthly system,
right,
you know, stop and end. So when you're voting, voting's not in the Bible. That's the truth. I'm for voting. Am I making this clear, Johnny?
Man,
for the politicians and for the people.
Son of a gun.
But in the Bible, that really wasn't the way that it worked. In the early church, certainly, you know, it wasn't a voting thing. Now they would gather together all the leaders, and they would just come to consensus and decide and seek God's counsel. And the reason we don't do that is we don't trust leaders. And
right.
Often we have good reason not to trust leaders.
Well, and if you go the other direction of it, though, if you say, well, we're going to be pretty spiritual about this, then it's like you could have like a flaky person saying, God told me.
Sure. No,
there'll be no vote because God appointed me.
I think.
How could you ever argue with that guy?
I think that early systems of church governance in the United States were put in place for good reason.
Yeah.
Because, yes. You know, if you don't have Paul or Peter at the table and somebody's misusing that system and just claiming authority. So I understand why it's there.
Yeah.
I think, you know, where we've gone to is kind of a hybrid, and a lot of churches have. So instead of like, we're not going to look, if we come together to vote on everything,
yeah,
then you're just, number one, your church membership is often not, you know, as vested as elders or leaders will be. They're there and they're excited, but it doesn't mean that they're.
When they can see the long throw, they can see pitfalls and
yeah, you got elders to go, look, I'm in this, and then the members are a part. You know what we do now, we have an eldership model. Members then don't have voting privileges. Members are a part of a spiritual body, that, you know, that's our thing. And so there is a voting body though of a larger group of elders. So and you know, the deal is though, we had the other for so long, and in 14 years they never voted on one thing except changing the Constitution to go to this model.
Right.
So, you know, because if you're not going to have a new pastor, that's really the only time that those things matter. So I'm not opposed. I get bringing in a pastor to let members meet them and all of those things.
Yeah.
I do think it would be.
It is weird, though, those Sundays where you're like auditioning. That pastor's kind of auditioning.
Tryout.
He's singing for his supper. It's a weird moment.
That's when I would rather. I think it would be healthier if there were elders in place that the people were. That they trusted, you know, to say, hey, we're going to really vet this process and do this. And as you guys decide, because here's the deal, your vote really is your attendance. We don't need everybody to be in complete agreement on everything. Like, that's not the body of Christ either. It's okay that you have a dissenting viewpoint. We got to learn how to actually deal with conflict and deal with disagreement. I think that's a big problem. The reason we vote is it now shuts down the opposing viewpoint, and now the majority wins. When it could be that the body is enriched by a proper biblical, respectful, forgiving, gentle, you know, dialogue, whereby we're okay walking away saying that somebody doesn't agree with me, or that we both are able to listen to one another to the point that we come to a better conclusion that was neither one of ours but somewhere in the middle. But that sounds all too idealistic, though. That is the biblical way. That's the biblical way, but it's hard. And so,
I disagree with everything you just said. So let's test your theory,
Johnny. I understand that you disagree, and with gentleness, I respond and say, "It's okay. I still love you, even if you're wrong." No, anyway, I'm cool with it. I get it why people do it, and there's because I'm sure somebody's listening, going, "Well, yeah, but I was in a church where, like you said,
it's a tough situation to go through.
Some guy got leadership, and he was the wrong guy, and nobody could do anything about it." So I understand that why we have it. I just think that we cannot.
Did you grow up in a church like that though, where they had to audition people ever?
No, because I grew up in my grandfather's church.
Right, your grandfather's church. Yeah, it is a weird moment. I went to Christian school that had a church attached. You know, it was a church and school. And they had a pastor there for many years who was beloved, much beloved. And he had an affair with somebody who he was marriage counseling. So it was the total, like, prototypical church moral failure.
Well, but that's a double whammy, because you're literally abusing the power, the authority that you had to do good.
And the people loved him so much that they made her out to be the temptress, awful person. She was a member of that church, of course. Her daughter went to that school, was a cheerleader. Mm. Was just, it was a huge mess. So when I started probably junior high, they were in the process of their church, which we had chapel. I didn't go to church there because I grew up Pentecostal. They were a Baptist school. And so, which I got grief for all the time. But I had heard they were interviewing. So they would have, I mean, they must have run 12 or 13 guys through there on different Sundays that were basically, and I don't know if they voted right then. I think there was a council watching, and then they chose another guy. And then he would do the chapels because the pastor of that church would do the chapels. So I loved the guy they chose. I thought he was great. But I just kept hearing from kids that were part of that damage. They were like, oh, Pastor so-and-so, you know, they'll never fill his shoes. And I was like, well, I don't know that he needs to have his shoes filled, you know.
Wow.
But I think it's okay. Like, there is forgiveness, there's grace and all that. But it's the idea of, too, of which we've never really talked about this before, this idea of if you have this moral failure and you're this leader of people and you're like, well, let's restore. That's the biblical way. But does that mean put right back in the same situation that caused the problem in essence? You know, Ted Haggard, great example.
Yeah.
You know, he led one of the largest churches. He was over a body that led like 20 something thousand other churches or something.
Right.
So he was over a huge evangelical organization when he had his scandal. And, you know, they did an HBO documentary about it, and it was very pointed at the church for not restoring him, or they turned their back on me and all this. And it's like, go run a soup kitchen.
Right.
If you still feel like you're called to ministry, you don't have to necessarily be the leader of something anymore that's seen on TV every week. I just don't understand that idea of like it immediately you want to blame somebody.
Yeah.
When you made your own situation. I'm fascinated by like your thoughts on what's the role of the church when there's a moral failure. What are the limits? When do you go, all right, you're done? Like, obviously, if it involves like a child or something, we have limits in our culture.
Right.
Like, you know, like if you cheated on your wife with another woman, like this pastor did, he was in a position of authority, but it's different than being in a position of authority and then there's a child involved or something.
Right.
Like what we saw with the Catholic Church. And then they covered it up and all that. Like, there's so much outrage and there should be. So there's limits. And then there's some people that are just like, it doesn't matter, and we're going to support this anointed person of God. The call of God is without repentance. Like, at what point does somebody forfeit that and all that? What is your opinion on all that?
Yeah, I think it's a most difficult question imaginable, so thanks for that.
Yeah, I'm glad to help. You've got 30 seconds.
you know, I think that the anointed one mindset has gotten us to a lot of bad places.
Yeah.
Because I think scripture actually calls those who are in the highest levels of leadership to greater accountability, not less. I don't think that means it's a witch hunt or demonizing people because of their authority, and that happens too. But I think this may not seem like the answer everybody wants to the question, but I think it's necessary for me.
Yeah.
Because everybody wants a, well, you know, yes, forgive, no, forgive, or don't forgive, and everything's real summed up. I really believe the reason that people at any level of spiritual leadership have these kinds of failures is because they're not experiencing a fullness of transparency within. I mean, in fact, Andrew's been talking about this a lot. He's been going to a lot of meetings with pastors. So you'll have 20, 30 pastors in the room, and there'll be somebody will ask them, do you have anybody in your church that you are accountable to that you can trust? And most of them say no. All of their accountability that they have to find is to be sought outside of the community they're in, because it's not acceptable either in their minds or other people's minds for the person leading you to actually struggle with the same things that they're leading you to overcome. So these guys are just teaming up with other pastors, but then within their community, it doesn't exist because it wouldn't be tolerated.
Yeah,
that is the problem. So, because if we can't be real within the actual communities that we're serving in, or much less that we're growing in,
yeah,
then we're actually like trying to perpetuate or sell I'm going to use this term, a product that we don't use. So we're telling everybody else mm-hmm. inside that room, hey, you should all be sharing this life and your weaknesses and all these things to everyone else. But I'm going to go do that elsewhere, not here.
But some of that's the expectations of the church members. In other words, we can say, well, why isn't the pastor being accountable to us? I want him in my life group. But if he did say something that was just this, he dropped a bomb in your life group that he struggles with porn or something, yeah. let's say, would you then write him off? Well, he doesn't need to be my pastor anymore. He struggled. He's just like me. Jeez. Like, would you then?
Yeah.
So I think it's hard to know where the chicken or the egg
well,
is.
Well, I think one, it doesn't mean he's accountable to the whole church.
Yeah.
I think that he needs to find trusted community where he can be accountable somewhere within that church. That's something we've been saying a lot from the beginning of mm-hmm. some of our new processes is we're not saying you need to be sharing your deepest, darkest secrets with everybody in the church, but we are saying it should be happening somewhere.
Yeah.
If it's not happening anywhere within it, then it's not just an exposing. That's not our point either. The point is not, oh, let's expose all the embarrassing things. It's that without light in those places, then you are hiding something that's hurting you.
Yeah.
Like it's hurting you to carry this thing in the back that nobody knows about and then putting on this other mask because you really want to be good. You really want to be Christ-like, all those things. But the way to become Christ-like is to allow Christ to deal in the light with the things that you're dealing with, to be transparent. And if you don't have a safe place to do that, then it's just this vicious cycle.
Yeah.
Of you didn't set out to be fake, but you end up now having areas of your life that are fake that you don't expose to it because you have no trusted place to come to because that's not the context that we've all – that's not the premise of the whole gospel for us. The premise of the whole gospel is that you can be – you that Jesus already knows who you are. Mm-hmm. He already gets it. You're not hiding anything. And that that God's people can be a place where you are actually not just working through those things. It's not just therapy. But that Jesus also does a work in you supernaturally because you are courageous enough to not present yourself as someone that you're not. And no. I think if you get that whole idea that the mess is out front,
yeah.
Like I think about that. We talked about it before. I just think about Paul's opening line is always. We've made it so. We've summed it up as some almost sacred thing that he's on stained glass. But Paul's opening line is, guys, you know what? Do you know what I'm crying? Because he said that I would come to them with tears and trembling. Yeah. I think he had trouble getting it out. Like, okay, here's this big moment to preach this big sermon to people who've never heard about Jesus, and he's in the corner trembling. And like, I don't know if I can do this.
Yeah.
I came and he's got tears in his eyes. Guys, I'm going to do this because this is what's important, but you need to know something. I used to kill people. I used to enslave women and men alike because of the thing I'm going to talk to you about. And the only reason the shame doesn't crush me, he's not doing the tears out of shame. I just think this is still a difficult topic. He's leading with his brokenness. And because he had such a drastic thing, I think he stayed in touch with it. He never stopped considering himself the chief of sinners, never stopped being amazed by what true grace was. He never walked past that. And I think that we've just stopped. You know, we had a big discussion at a table Wednesday night about it, that, well, I don't have this story or that story. So when a pastor thinks he doesn't really understand, and I get this because this has been me, but I think this is what's happening to your scenario.
Yeah.
I think when a pastor doesn't consider the price of what was paid to be as great for his brokenness as for someone else who is the pornographer or the person who is trafficking or all those things, well, I'm not that bad. Anytime we have a I'm not that bad mentality, it's completely cultural. It's not biblical. And there are biblical levels of human consequences that will come for different things.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's just Proverbs. That's just wisdom. You're going to go shoot somebody, then yeah, you're going to go to jail.
Yeah.
Okay. And if I'm going to tell a lie today, I'm not, most likely. So it depends on what I lie about, I suppose. Now, if you're lying about someone you shot, Johnny, I don't even know where to begin.
Man, that's a lot. There's layers.
But this like idea that I'm not trying to make myself out to be worse than I am. I'm trying to discover how bad I was the whole time, and that that's actually a huge part of the good news.
Yeah.
People who don't know they need to be rescued don't get rescued.
Yeah.
They're not looking for it. They're not grateful for it. They're not. And so I think a guy thinks, well, I'm the leader here. I'm doing great. And these people are in trouble. And he's in trouble the moment he thinks that. And the reason he thinks that is he's not sitting in a group in his house. And I mean, like, oh gosh, it sounds like I'm perpetuating groups and promoting groups, Johnny. Groups by definition.
Get the life group today.
My goodness. Groups have to happen by definition to have a community of some sort. You got to be in a group of people. So yeah. I get it. But I'm not talking about the church systems. But if I don't sit across a table from you and say, hey, dude, you know what? I had this thought about this other woman I shouldn't have had. Hey, dude, you know what? I'm struggling with greed because, I have this earthly security thing. And when I dream, I mean, I'm not doing anything, but when I dream in my mind about things, it's always me having more. And I think that maybe I have a problem here. If I've never had a safe place to do that, where you're sitting with me in that body and that people know I do that, they don't have to know what all it is, but they should know I'm doing that. They should know that. And when they don't, then it's just a matter of time before I feel so superior that, yes, some lady comes in and she's struggling in her marriage and she's vulnerable and I am invincible. And that's just a recipe scripturally for disaster.
Right.
And then, by the way, this is the irony of it all. The very thing that we were trying to prevent, the very thing we were acting as if we had, which is that I now believe I'm not susceptible to the same temptation or sin because I've overcome it. And so because I wasn't living in the light, what happens? Eventually, the light completely exposes the very thing that if I just would have lived out in a community, it didn't have to destroy me. And now the light exposes it and it destroys everything. It's coming either way. We might as well live in a place where we're being honest about it, because it all is going to come to light. It comes to light here. It comes to light for eternity. And usually it comes to light in leadership regardless, and you can't hide it anyway. So there you go.
No, I like that. Well, that was way longer than 30 seconds. I like that. It's an interesting thing to talk about, that whole thing of like the cult of personality pastor, that he's the spiritual one. He's the one that has the super secret handshake relationship with God. So we can, by proxy, we believe in this guy, and he really believes in God enough for all of us. But the price of that is that he gets to just be behind closed doors, and we don't know what's going on. But we assume it's all good. Hey, we're going to give our money, but we don't need a business report. We just assume that the church is doing good work.
Right.
And so we give him way longer leash because of that perceived hyper-spirituality, and that's the reason for the downfall. It's like, I'm fascinated by that. And then the idea that you can just at any moment say, God told me, and somebody will fall in line with that. You know, it goes back to camp. I mean, I remember camp was like for both these conversations, one was like I wish I had a testimony that good. We hate our testimony. Tim Hawkins has a thing. He always talks about like the guy would come to our church, and sometimes he would share his testimony, and I'd be like, my testimony stinks compared to this guy. I wish I was addicted to crack, you know? And, we envy testimonies. So like, that's the big pop. It's like, God rescued me from this. And so we're almost making an idol of the sin rather than about talking about how good God is. Cause we're like, man, this guy was in bad stuff. And you get excited about the outrageous details of what he did and the debauchery. So like, we'd have like testimony Thursday at camp.
Yeah.
And kids would come up and they would start their testimonies, you know? And
top that testimony
is the big game show. And then you just handing a seventh grader or an eighth grader a microphone is like handing them a loaded gun.
Oh yeah.
You never know what's going to happen. They're going to shoot themselves in the foot. Yeah. They're going to randomly it's unbelievable. Youth directors who did this, God love you. I don't know what you were thinking, but I mean, I know you thought you had the best of intentions, but I remember one time. Do you remember this? When we were at the camp, and this girl got up.
I've done this before, so I'm one of your guys. I am the cautionary tale.
This girl got up and she said, "I just want to thank God for saving me." And she was doing very generic stuff, and then she said, "And this during the Wednesday night service, he revealed to me who I'm going to marry."
Oh, I forgot about that.
And it just took all the pain away, because I don't have to worry anymore. Mm-hmm. I know who it is. And then she said the boy's name.
Billy.
She said the boy's name, who was there, at which point she's 16 or whatever. Oh, no. At which point he wants to crawl underneath the back row, you know, and just like, please don't do this here.
Because now he has to disobey God.
He has to disobey God if he breaks up with her.
Right.
And I just thought, what a fascinating thing. So the hyper-spiritual, like, God told me mentality, now that's – that we talk about with megachurch pastors sometimes, that's now going to be their existence. Like, what? When does it end, you know, with this girl? I mean, it could be like, I don't know. Where do you want to eat tonight? So if you do marry her, where do you want to eat tonight? I don't know. Anything? Applebee's? God told me Chili's. Like, is it ever – does it ever end? You can't even.
Well, I'm getting something. Skillet.
Queso. I'm picking up a. Yeah.
You know, and that's what's so funny is if you had people, you know, and again, be clear here. I've handed microphones to kids before. After a while, you start learning, like, hey, what are you going to say?
That's how you direct them.
Hey, help me know what you're going to say here. And let's
or you set them up with a sentence.
Yeah.
Hey, let's talk about your history with your family.
Yeah.
That way they can be specific instead of just going off on there.
But, you know, when you do have that environment of a kid does that, a lot of leaders from that mindset will then go, oh, I can't believe they said that. But then you do want to point out, like, guys, the reason they said that is that's the only kind of leadership they've ever seen.
Yeah.
Spirituality equals God speaks to me and told me to come do this camp, or God told me to.
Yeah.
And God does speak to us. But, you know, there's this. And I think that what we want is for God to tell us what we're going to do so that we, like she said, I don't have to worry anymore.
Yeah.
And that's not at all the scriptural way. Like, it never happened. It never happened. And if he ever did tell you what you're going to do, like, it wasn't – it was because you were going to need that because you're about to go to prison or whatever. So he told Joseph, you know, through dreams, you know, that you're going to, you know, there was a hint that you're going to do something great.
Mm-hmm.
But it was only so Joseph would not lose heart.
Right. It was on the other side of
40 years of slavery and imprisonment. You know, it wasn't like that was a yay. You know, it was a, you're going to need this. For most people, it's what he wants from you is that you will trust him and live with other people and the wisdom he's given through scripture so that when you're going to pick a husband or a wife that is not, yes, seek his counsel.
Yeah.
And yes, listen to the internal impressions of those things. And then also sit with somebody who's been married a long time, who's doing this in the way you want, and sit with other friends and talk through pros and cons. That's good too, because out of an abundance of counselors, there's safety for you. But that's a process that we don't want. If we begin to build it where instead of just we're just assembling random counselors for big decisions instead of living in a life where we're constantly surrounded by that counsel. So the big decisions and little decisions alike are kind of coming forth more naturally.
Yeah.
I'm living in that place. But yeah, the reason you get top that testimony, you know, and that someone's going to say that I know now how God is leading me is that that's a lot easier. So in theory, it's actually
well, it's
not.
Like it's like the conversation killer. All you got to do is just say, God told me or yeah. But I mean, that's an interesting thought you brought up though, of like God sometimes protects us from knowing everything except the next step. You know, because if you did know, like, let's say you knew the day you were going to die.
Right.
If God just allowed you to know it, that would be a crushing thing. You think it would be great because you'd be like, well, I know I have 12 years.
Right.
I got 12 years to get it together. But then it's like you would.
There'd be no.
Your whole life would change. It's like Doc Brown knowing that the Libyans are coming. He didn't want to know at first. Then you see he's taped the letter together or whatever. But first, when he finds out that he could know, he tears the letter up or whatever.
Yep.
We're supposed to tear the letter up, I think, John, spiritually.
It's just like Marty said. No, Doc. No, I think it's a fascinating – I'm rereading that Just Do Something book. It's one of those I'm always in on my phone if I have a few seconds because it's so fascinating. But he just points out God, that was never God's main purpose. Literally, the focus of individual American Christianity is to try to discern God's will of direction for your life.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, if I pray with anybody, it's about, I have this decision, you know, I mean, having a crisis of prayer about is one thing, but it's almost always about direction too, especially when you're younger. I think it's for everybody. Should I go here? Should I go there? Should I go to this church? Should I go to this church? I had a, you know, should I take up this job, change this job? And it's like, and I said something to somebody last week and it sounds really almost sacrilegious, but I said, I don't think God cares.
Yeah.
I was like, no, don't.
About like a job.
Right. Don't misunderstand me. God cares deeply about every detail of your life. And by the way, he's sovereign and your life is already written in his book. But does God want you to know what's in that book?
Yeah.
He doesn't.
Yeah. If Sadie gets old enough to like work a job and then she leaves Chick-fil-A to go work at Kohl's, you're not going to love her less.
Right.
You'd be like, man, why would she leave that job? Chick-fil-A was where, that's what I had for her.
Right. She missed
I
it.
I wanted the free sandwiches. there might be bitterness there.
Right.
Because what are you going to get at Kohl's?
Who among us, right?
You want a 10%?
They don't serve sandwiches at Kohl's.
No, not now.
They should.
Well, it's an idea.
I've taken sandwiches in the Kohl's.
Have you? Just snuck in a sandwich? You're like, it's going to be a while. Laura's a shopper.
You know what bugs me about Kohl's and about every... You know what? If they would just put seating for those of
right.
us who are not shopping, just put a dude chair in there in
they
every
don't want,
store.
They don't want you loitering. They don't want you there.
Well, I promise I won't even look up. I won't make anybody
that
feel...
That thing is, though, yeah, because if you wander around, you look suspicious.
You look worse. Now yeah. I'm hanging out. So let's just say Laura's trying on swimsuits. Now I'm hanging out in the swimsuit department.
Right.
Because I have nowhere else to go, you know.
Right.
So I have no choice but to try
out
on some swimsuits.
And break out a sandwich. And I got some marinara on this one, so just ring it up.
It's a two-piece, though. The bottoms are fine. Yeah. Anyway, it got weird. How did I end up in a...
You ended up in a two-piece in that scenario.
With sandwich juice.
That's 100% true story. I can't believe it.
But you, I think if you really came down to it, how much of your daily, actual, functional Christianity is asking God what's going to happen to let you know what you right. should do? Or I've done something and I'm asking God to either support it or...
Yeah, protect you from the consequences
yeah.
of it.
And it's like, and how many people are most disgruntled with God because God did not tell them. So now they made a decision, it didn't turn out well, and they feel like God abandoned them in it. And the truth is, God's with them in the bad decision, he's helping, and they don't even know the level of how much worse that could be affecting them. Because, you know, something with Sadie... You know, Sadie and I were having a thing the other night. Laura was on a trip. Mm-hmm. I had this thing of soda water, and we love fizzy waters. And then I had this, I was cutting up a lime just to put in the soda water. And so she saw the lime, and she loves to work in the kitchen. She said, "Ooh, can I cut some lime?" I said, "Okay, you know, don't hurt yourself," kind of thing. And I know she hates soda water. So she goes to pour soda water in this cup. And I said, "Honey, don't waste, because there's not that much left." I said, "Don't waste the soda water." "Oh, Daddy, no, I won't." She said, "I'll drink everything I put in there."
Right.
I said, "Sadie, you hate soda water.
Yeah.
And you're going to waste my soda water because you're not listening to me. Okay? So don't do it." "It's okay, Daddy. I'll drink everybody." I was like, "Okay." So what do you think happens? She puts it in, hates it.
Right.
Squeezes the lime, hates it. Goes over and puts sugar in it, trying to make it sweeter. Hates it still. And she has this like really this gag reflex that's sensitive, you know.
Oh wow!
And so, and I hated to be that guy, but I said, "Sadie, you're gonna drink. You're 10 now. You're gonna drink every drop of this."
Wow!
I warned you three
it's
times.
Like you locked her in the closet to smoke all the cigarettes or whatever. Like that's the old.
You don't come out of there until you've
drank this soda water.
You have chewed this entire package of chewing tobacco. So I said, "Sadie, honey. This is the thing I told you.
Yeah.
I helped you in this moment, and you wanted your own way, you know. But here's the deal. I actually told her what would be helpful. In this scenario of finding God's will, I actually told her what would happen. And she still didn't want to do it. I think there's so many principles of wisdom that we're not applying, looking for a specific answer. It's like, God, should I marry this person? God's word is filled with wisdom on the right
who
kind of
to be
person.
Around
right.
and who to avoid,
how it works, how you know if a person's a complainer, this is what it does in your
by the
life.
Way my favorite scripture about relationships is it's better to sleep on the roof of a house yeah. than to live inside it with a quarreling wife.
Yep. Or husband. That was just written by a man. So if it had been written by a woman, it could be the husband too. It's true of both. It's true of both.
You made it. So, okay, that's fine.
Oh, no, look, Solomon was not the guy you're going to put speaking at the women's conference. You know
well,
what I'm
that's
saying?
True. And so, Solomon had like these ornate like castles and you know, huge temples. And I mean, he had a pretty big
sleeping
mansion.
On his roof. He probably
sleeping
had.
On his roof is probably like a nice.
He had like a penthouse.
He did. He was like, better, oh, it's way better on the roof.
I got to go up here to this penthouse now.
Where one or 12 of my concubines is probably.
Right. If she's already up here. I have 1,000 wives. And. Wow.
The wisdom of that scripture is suddenly fleeting.
We've deflated it a little bit. But that's the point, though. Like, I'm not harping on this, Johnny, but it's everything. It's everything. The reason I'm harping on it is because it's true. Like, if we would have lived in the kind of relationships God has for us, then we never would have spent 6 months dating a dude that we have no business marrying because somewhere in our life would have loved us well enough and we would have let them in enough to say, hey,
right.
He's kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
He doesn't, y'all don't have anything in common, doesn't treat you with respect, doesn't listen to you, doesn't have a future here. All these things would be okay to say without them being offensive. How dare you talk about my relationships? Why don't you just love me the way that I am? Loving you the way that you are is where we start, you know, and we always have that. I love you just how you are. Absolutely. And you're hurting yourself. You literally keep stabbing yourself with a knife in the knee. And I don't like that for you because you're in pain all the time and it gets infected. So, hey, I love you enough to also tell you, here's how to not stab yourself in the knee with a knife, Johnny. God, what that. Isn't that is beautiful?
Preach.
I think I heard that in a song.
Stab myself in the knee with a knife, I think, is a Marilyn Manson tune. It's,
I just think, then you could say, God, yes, guide me. And that was the other thing in the book. There's a difference between God guiding you and God telling you everything to do. But guiding means that you're going to keep rowing and I'm going to keep adjusting the rudder.
Yeah.
But you're going to have to keep going forward. You're going to have to keep moving and doing these things. But if you're going to stop and wait, asking me to row, like I am, I'm the current, I'm the, in all the metaphors, I'm the boat, I'm the water, I'm all of it. But I'm going to move. I'm asking you to go.
Yeah.
And then it's just okay. And so I think in those, that seems to be the theme today. In those scenarios, and how many things in life are we just not going because we're sitting back waiting, even upset that God's not telling us where to go when it's like, hey, row and go the ways that are, you know, I love that we said all the time that this is the way, walk in it. Not like north necessarily, but like if you decide to go north because it seems the best to you. In fact, there's a great scripture where the early church fathers come together and say, it seemed good to us and to the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. It seemed good to the Holy Spirit and to us. I think it's how they say actually. Like, we think this is where God's leading us, and this also makes sense to us in the natural. That's a great way to make decisions. It seems good to the Holy Spirit and to me. I don't feel anything in my heart saying, oh, this is awful, you know, kind of thing. But even if I feel nothing, it's okay for me to search wisdom and counsel and all those things and to try to come up with a decision as well. So.
But you talk about the marriage thing, like, did you do any missionary dating? Like where, you know what I'm talking about? Like where you find the lost cause. You're really just hung up on somebody because they're the bad girl, but you like make it like, but when she gets on fire for God though, it's going to be something else. Were you attracted to the bad girl?
What am I allowed to say here?
I don't know.
I'm always afraid somebody
that
I care about is going to listen. And
well,
be like,
you can.
You know,
I want that to happen.
I don't want them to think.
That's exactly what I mean.
It's so judgmental to be like, oh, yeah, they were the bad girl. You know, but well, Johnny, I was a bad kid who thought I was good. But anyway, but I just totally turned
somebody,
them
on. Wouldn't it be funny if that was true? Like somebody thought that you were there.
We both thought it.
Yeah. They thought that you were. They were saving you.
So I had a rule. I had an arbitrary, law-based, legalistic rule that I would not date someone who was not a believer.
Okay.
Unequally yoked. Like just a profession was enough. Anything after that.
Profession of faith.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah, I'm a Christian. And no matter what the heck else they were into.
Yeah.
No matter what the heck else they were. I said what else and what the
what
heck.
The,
and it sounded like I was saying.
What the Hulk.
What the Hulk else okay. they were anyway.
The Incredible Hulk. Go ahead.
No matter what else they were into,
right?
Like that was such a ridiculous non-standard because I'm in the South. There's not a person around that won't say, "Oh yeah, I got baptized." Yeah. Sure, you know. So It was a ridiculous thing.
It was right before I got this neck tattoo. Not the neck tattoos.
Jeez, Johnny.
I'm just trying to.
God, you're so legalistic.
I'm so legalistic. It's
you
true.
Really are.
If you're listening, you have a neck tattoo.
No, but I remember having girls tell me, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with having sex before we're married.
Yeah.
You know? And I'd be like, well, look, I'm not going to do that, but we can still date and hang out and whatever. You know? And then I remember having that conversation with one girl. She was like, I was like, are you cool with that? Because I'm not going to go all the way.
Right.
Like, I'm having this conversation. Like, yeah. I needed community.
Yeah, you did.
I need somebody to go. And she's like, yeah, I'm cool with that. And she was great. And that was great. And it didn't work out. Shocker. I know, shocker. But here's the thing. I mean, what I hate about that is, I mean, what an opportunity, you know, even at that age one opportunity to help somebody, you know, in my own life, we weren't helping each other.
Yeah.
I needed help understanding biblical wisdom. I needed help understanding lust. She needed help understanding that, man, you know what? There's such a better way, you know, for us where we are. And yeah. I probably had some self-righteous, judgmental viewpoint that I was holy somehow, you know, and she, who knows how she felt, you know, I don't know, because I was being too selfish to even find out.
So. Well, and it's weird too, to be in a relationship where you know that the other person is willing to do more than
that's
you physically.
That's a temptation that you're...
If you're the guy, especially, you're just like, what? This is... No, that's... Yeah. That'd be hard to do.
Yeah. I was a kid. I'm not like... I don't judge my... I sometimes too harshly judge my younger self. I really struggle with that, like, you know. But I do hope... I think that missionary dating, I used to say it doesn't work. We used to preach as a youth pastor.
Yeah.
Don't you bring in those people and you're going to date them and hope. And usually it didn't.
You won't bring them up. They'll bring you down.
And the deal was usually it didn't work because of community. Because your relationship's not going to last longer than 6 months in most high school relationships. Hey, everybody out there, we always used to say this. Your relationship when you're dating will end in one of two ways generally. Yeah. You're going to break up or you're going to get married.
Right.
And so if that person came to your youth group because of you, mm-hmm. then most likely the other kids are not going to engage them because they're going to assume that they're with you and they're fine. Oh, okay. Well, that's you know, so-and-so's girlfriend, and so she's with him, and, you know, and the girls don't engage. Like, the context of why you came was that relationship. So then if they come in, they make a decision for Christ. That happened a lot. They're involved. They love it. Everything's great. And then y'all break up. The deal is that context is still that they maybe haven't – so I used to say, well, if you're going to do it, that's fine. I would rather you do it than not do it. Bring people around. Just – you got to be disciplined to form other relationships, and you other kids got to be disciplined just because that's someone's boyfriend. Dudes, go reach out to him still.
Yeah.
Build relationships because there may come a day that they're not in that relationship, and then it's awkward for them. Now, it's already awkward.
That happens all the time, yeah. Yeah. Somebody comes and they –
yeah, now I don't want to come back because now and if you didn't form relationships, you're going to assume everyone hates you because you hurt someone's feelings. No, it's all, but
it's tough being a teenager, man.
It is.
It's great.
It's a lot.
I was thinking about my favorite thing ever growing up in church and going to church camp and stuff is the phrases that we would use that were somehow worse. They sounded creepier than the thing they were trying to prevent. And my favorite example is mixed bathing.
Yeah, it's so much worse.
Mixed bathing sounds so much worse than just boys and girls swimming together.
It sounds like...
It does. It sounds like just a debauched, just horrible
in a
Caligula.
Single bathtub.
Yeah, just horrible mixed bathing.
Thanks a lot, preachers, for helping us with that one.
I mean, I know it's technically called a bathing suit, but why would you just...
Right. Well, that's a very old... Like, it's a leftover from back when bathing suits that were the term.
Right, the bathing suits.
Yeah, mixed bathing had to come from then.
How did bathing suit become a bathing suit? What a weird thing. Like, you bathe naked.
Yeah, but I think bathing and swimming, the two words, just means getting into water.
Why is it not called just a swimsuit? It should just be called a swimsuit.
Well, it kind of is.
It is,
now.
But I'm saying.
See, previous story.
People still
about
say
me
bathing suit. People still say bathing suit still. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Mixed bathing.
It's funny the things that are left over.
Yeah.
Yeah, mixed bathing. I always think about that. I don't know why it's the funniest. It probably wasn't yours. You told me the other day because I brought it up.
Oh.
About the whole.
Oh, pee in the pool.
Yeah. That's not
or
yours.
Just being into the pool. No, that's not mine.
You'd always say that.
I'm sure I gave ample credit when I said
it. There's a big difference between peeing in the pool and peeing
into the pool.
Yeah.
It's important.
So funny.
It's an important distinction. Well, about, listen, somebody said this about the pool thing, because there was a story we talked about how you would get in the pool and they would threaten the kids.
Yeah.
We know how much pee is in this pool. There was a story literally a couple weeks ago, and it was from a Twitter account that I follow called Mental Floss. And they post these weird articles, scientific findings and things. And it said, science can now determine how much urine is in your swimming pool. And I was just like, why don't you just title this article, "So You Never Want to Swim Again?" Because why would you want to know that? It's gotta be a lot. It's gotta be gallons.
I don't know, Johnny. I mean, you treat it.
Yeah, but it's still.
But you're drinking water that has urine in it. That's treated. All water is recycled.
But it's not been. It's been treated and run through a thing. It's not still in.
Right.
The urine's not still a part of it.
You're not in the petri dish where the chemicals to treat it are being added. Like, you're just another thing jumping into it.
Yeah,
like, you're in the water processing plant. It's called a pool.
Yeah. And there's like chlorine and other things in there that are supposedly diffusing this. And yet I see kids floating on their back, like spouting it like a fountain. You're just like, oh no.
Yeah. When they get in their mouth, that's when you get that water out of your mouth. Oh.
Yeah.
But, you know, we did it.
I wanted to.
It turned out great.
You know, we went to I'm going back to Gulf Shores with Curry for our anniversary this Sunday. And we're taking the dogs with us this time. So that's going to be a nightmare. But one of the things we've talked about is like, wouldn't it be cool to have a beach house, like a little vacation home, you know? But then the sand, it bothers me after a couple of days. I'm like, eh. So then we were talking about like, we need like a lake house. We're more lake people, probably. Mm. Lake. Mm. You know, there's no sand. Whatever, you can still swim, you can go boating, whatever it is. And then that night, we're in the hotel, we're watching this show called
Swamp Creatures.
No, it's called I Almost Died, or Something Almost Killed Me. And the host is the guy, B.D. Wong, from remember the Father of the Bride movies, the Asian dude?
Yeah.
He's that guy. So he's like, B.D. Wong's like, here's the case of, and he starts telling this case of these kids who, they were fine, totally normal kids, and then 4 days later, they're in the hospital. 7 days later, they're dead. Oh. And it was because the brain-eating amoeba that gets up your nose and goes into your brain and eats brain tissue. You don't know why you're sick, and this amoeba slowly. They have a drug to treat it now, if you can catch it in time. But I was just like, we can't have a lake house because we'll be the
when that came out, we were going to the lake at my in-laws.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was I really was like, hey, don't put the water in your mouth. You know, like you just.
Well, the mouth's fine. That's what they said. It's nose. Kids don't hold their nose when they jump and it goes straight up their nose. I mean,
But you, again.
It's a one in a million or whatever.
I know.
But you just.
People have often told me I was a one in a million. Johnny.
Did they? Since I got this brain amoeba, I've been preaching a lot better. Somehow, less is more when it comes to brain tissue. You wouldn't believe it.
Oh, my goodness. You had no idea.
It would explain a lot about you. If I found out John Driver's got a brain amoeba, I'd be like,
it would explain a lot to me about me. Yeah. I think I would feel better. You know, like, oh. Hey, you got a show tonight.
Yeah, Zany's. They're not going to.
Right. Well, I have already. Mm. I won't. This won't be posted today.
You're going to come to the show.
I plan on coming to the show.
So you're going to flake. That's fine.
Johnny.
We flake on each other,
how
though.
Long
that's part of our community.
It is.
We're flaky and we're forgiving.
And we're okay with it.
Yeah.
So you're featuring.
I'm featuring, which means I'll do the middle spot. There's a host that'll be about 15. I'll do about 25. And then the headliner is a guy named Mark Normand, who is a pretty well-known comic now. He just did Jimmy Fallon, and he's done some things. He's a good comic, really good, really great joke writer. So it's cool to do clubs every now and again. It's
This is an A room.
Yeah, clubs kind of, if you don't know anything about clubs, like there's A room, B room, C room. And A room, it's usually like what talent you can draw, not the room itself.
Yeah.
So Zany's in Nashville is definitely an A room. They draw big, big name acts. Chris Rock worked out his latest Netflix special at Zany's. He did 10 nights in a row. And so it's a great room. And so it'll be fun to do that. So I have that tonight and tomorrow before I leave for the beach. And it'd be fun to kind of stretch my legs a little bit on a stage like that. They're fun. I've always had a good experience there. Some people are like, well, how do you do comedy clubs? Like, when I first started doing clubs, I always thought, like, is this going to be like, I didn't know what to expect. And it's just, I don't know. I like it. I like the different energy of like somebody who is not necessarily invested in your career at all. Like, what do you really have?
Yeah.
You can find out what you really have in a club.
Yeah, it's all content. You know? Yeah, it's so. Not, you can't rely on the room.
Yeah, you can't rely on politeness.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, no, we paid a ticket price, bring it.
Right.
So you got to laugh. So, but no, it'll be fun.
Excited. I plan
and on. If you don't show up, I'll know. I'm going to look out there and I'll see you. It's a small enough room that I'll be like, John flaked again.
No, here's the deal. What if I came and then left, though, you just didn't see me? You know what I'm saying? I'd be like, dude, great set. Sorry, I had to split. You'd be like, where were you? I was like, in the back.
Yeah, that's true. You could do that.
Which table? And I'll be like,
you could lie.
The third one.
You said that you're not going to lie. Remember before we first started the show, you said, I'm not going to lie today.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
You mean just for today?
Yeah.
Is that? But I said that yesterday at 3, so after 3 o'clock today.
That's right. You got a moratorium on the lie.
Right, I'm back.
The lie promise.
No, I plan on, listen, Johnny, notwithstanding... Here's the deal. Am I allowed to leave after your set? He's doing his set, then you'll do his set.
I think you're going to like him, but whatever.
It's not that.
That's kind of rude.
Is it?
Yeah.
Won't there be like an intermission?
No.
But what if I'm just so old. It's so hard to stay.
It's not going
to
be that late. It's an hour and a half show. It'll end at
total.
It'll end at nine. Yeah.
You're guaranteeing me that.
Uh-huh.
Do I get free food?
What time do you go to bed at night, John?
I'm in the bed. Go to bed and in the bed.
Like, I wish there were more benches around the house.
I know. I'm really...
Not just at Kohl's. I need places to sit, between the kitchen and the dining room.
Listen, my wife has a sleeping disorder.
Yeah.
Which means we all have a sleeping disorder.
What's her sleeping disorder? I don't know this.
She's just not... She doesn't sleep. Like, so it's...
That's a disorder? They just name it that?
Well, I don't know.
She doesn't sleep.
It's not diagnosed, problem. Per se, but she just... She doesn't sleep deeply.
She sleeps light.
Yeah. So she might wake up and then I'm out and my dog. There's all kinds of stuff. I used to sleep like a...
So you think she's going to be asleep when you get home?
Maybe. And then I'll wake her up and then she'll be up all night because I woke her up. Oh, I was sleeping so
How
good.
Was the show? That's what she'll ask because she'll want to know.
Well, I'll come.
Yeah.
And then we'll see what happens. I'll probably stay now that you
I'm
going to
bring
that.
It. And don't be that person that's like, you doing some new stuff? Don't do that.
Why
You're my friend.
That?
Because people do that.
I
if they've been
the
following
stuff.
Your comedy for a while, they're like, you doing any?
Look, I gave you 5 quality jokes after the last episode, and you didn't use any of them that show.
I didn't. So, I'm out tonight, though. This is
you're not going to do it.
This is probably not the show for that.
No. No, not at Zany's. Although the one joke you said you couldn't use in churches might work, but I don't think it'd be that funny here.
It's not like...
No, it's not dirty. Apparently, we just can't.
John's right. I can't even say what the topic is. John's going blue over here. It's fine. Look.
Well, I look forward to hearing you, man. It's going to be great.
It's going
to
be good.
And then next week, you'll be out. So
yeah, we'll
see what happens. Maybe I can call you in. Maybe this time, you'll be able
to
answer.
Well, I'm home Thursday, so we can still record.
Oh, you're only going until Thursday.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. So maybe I'll call you in anyway, just across the room.
Let's try it.
Yeah, it'd be great. So, hey, guys, thanks for listening. Be sure to share. I've been told that we need to actually bring comments you're sending onto the show and kind of do that more regularly.
Oh, right.
But that only works if you give comments.
Or
questions. Like, what's a topic? What's something you want
to... Oh, sure. Yeah, we'd love to do that.
Yeah. So be sure that you send those. You can actually, you can tweet them at us. You can go at Johnny_W.
Uh-huh.
Or at John_driver. You can go to at talk about. No,
talk,
at
talk, talk AB that pod.
I forgot it. Yeah.
Talk AB that pod.
Yeah. just do it to one of us if you want. So, but exciting stuff. We had a good month again in July with you guys being a part. So begin to share and we appreciate it. And we're looking forward to more episodes and more topics with you here on
Talk About That.
Finding uplifting news in today's headlines is often like searching for a needle in a haystack. At the Story Behind podcast, we believe in the power of finding heartwarming tales and are happy to share empowering stories with you every week. Get inspired by the note a waitress received from a patron dining alone. and even hear about how one VIP passenger made a hardworking pilot get emotional before his flight. To start listening to the story behind podcast, visit lifeaudio.com